Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. The United States Constitution, a document by design that requires testing and proving. But does it need updating? The mob thinks it does. In our last program, Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, and Greg Hamilton, president of the Northwest Religious Liberty Association, discussed how many today believe that the Constitution is outdated and needs to be revised in, according to them, some dangerous ways. Today we listen to a continuation of that interview that took place a couple of years back. What they said then is even more relevant today. Lincoln Steed throws out the first question concerning the infamous mob. Greg Hamilton has a ready answer. Let's listen.
In the Bible, where do we find the mob dynamic?
Mark chapter 15, in regard to Christ's trial before Pilate, is very insightful because it talks about how the crowd demanded an exchange for Barabbas, okay, which was the custom at that time. And they asked or demanded somewhat of Pilate this exchange that you've allowed, that it's custom. We demand that you release Barabbas unto it. The insurrectionist, the zealot that wanted to basically overthrow Rome, okay, and restore Zion in their midst. Mm-hmm. And essentially, the people of Israel who follow Christ thought that he would do that, that if he was a Messiah, he would drive out
that's
Rome.
That's the great
from their
irony.
Midst.
I know.
That's even the disciples followed him on that basis for that motive that somehow, you know, we're on this grand revolutionary tour. He's going to overthrow Rome. We're going to establish Zion here. We're going to conquer the world and be his right men in his kingdom, the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, Chief of Staff, Secretary of Treasury. I mean, Judas had it all figured out. But Judas, in the end, lost because he wanted to try to force the hand of Christ to prove that he was the Messiah and to do the things that he expected, which was to throw out Rome from their midst and conquer them. But he didn't fulfill those promises.
Ultimately, Judas lost because he was not spiritually in harmony with the thinking of Christ. He made a huge tactical mistake. But I would like to think that even after trying to force the hand of Christ like that, if he had then repented as Peter did after that denial, I don't think it was beyond for him. But
no.
He was never spiritually in harmony with Christ.
No, but where I'm going with this has very little to do with Judas. When I look at the trial before Pilate, they first of all asked a question, then demanded, and then Pilate comes back with a question of his own. And he says, do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews? Knowing it was out of envy that the chief priests had handed Jesus over to him. And it was the church or the religious leaders who were making demands of the state. Now, mind you, this was an occupying country, Rome, in Jerusalem, okay, in Israel. So the Sanhedrin represented both church and state because it was the religious leaders were also the political leaders, so to speak.
Not so different from the Islamic world.
But they were weaker. They were the weaker factor here. Rome controlled them and ruled over them. So they had to do everything through Rome.
Well, they were not allowed to execute capital
punishment
against.
Right. But here is this crowd.
Many of them were paid off by the Sanhedrin.
I did my undergraduate degree in communications at Portland State University with a little bit of journalism and political science mingled in there. But one of the dynamics that I studied was crowd dynamics. And in this scene, the crowd is stirred up by the chief priests, okay, to not only make demands, but to get louder and louder until Pilate finally gives in, okay? Wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them. And in the midst of all that, they shouted, crucify him, crucify him. So the crowd dynamics represents a certain type of revolution. But I've asked myself, where were the disciples? Judas had already hung himself. Peter denied Christ three times, was so sorry for what he did, he went and wept and mourned in Gethsemane. And the rest of the disciples, led by John, were at a distance viewing the trial. And I find that interesting because what made up the mob, Ellen White says they were like wild, ravening, bellowing beasts that were like inspired by Satan. They had got caught up into this revolution. Okay, the disciples, even though they were confused about the kingdom and the nature of Christ's kingdom, nevertheless were being preserved for another revolution, the day of Pentecost,
the
preaching of the true kingdom of Christ, the preaching of a true Christ and not a counterfeit Messiah. And this is interesting because when you look at the whole picture.
You don't think they should have interjected themselves there?
No, I don't, because I think that the Lord was preserving them for a special time, a special moment, to where they wouldn't be tripping themselves up. I think if they had exposed themselves at this time, not only would they have been arrested. In fact, that was their biggest fear, that they would be arrested. Okay, because the soldiers were looking for them and so on, but they were hiding out in a way that eventually they went back to the upper room to hide out. But they wanted to make sure that they weren't overly exposed. And I think the Lord actually led them to do that. And I think for us, we have to ask ourselves, are we getting caught up in the Glenn Beck crowd, the Newt Gingrich crowd, the Michael Moore, the Keith Olbermann crowd? I say take a snow shovel and shove them all out of your living room window and shove those personalities out the door, okay? And insert the big picture, the great controversy, insert Jesus Christ. We need to be focused on Jesus and not false charismatic revolutions that lead us down a primrose path.
What happened in the Bible, and God clearly protected those disciples until the upper room, and then they went out. But remember, after they came out, there in the temple, Peter and John appeared in a very similar thing with the authorities were after them, and the crowd could have easily turned against them, but they stood on their principles, and neither could touch them.
But you said later on, that's important.
Well,
the Lord was preserving them for a certain mission and ministry at a certain time. And I think that we need to be careful. Yes, we need to be active in our ministry today. I'm not suggesting we shouldn't be active. That's not what I'm suggesting. What I'm suggesting is that we don't hold on to our political prejudices and make that the center of our lives.
Absolutely.
Or even the gospel itself. And that's what I see happening.
We shouldn't repeat what the crowd is saying.
Right.
But there are times when the crowd is saying something opposite, whether the crowd is even within our own church environment, even in a religious environment, the majority are nearly always wrong.
Yes.
And I think we have to stand for principle, and the Bible makes it very plain. We have to stand up and be counted. And sometimes that may appear like the crowd will then turn on us. But a crowd dynamic is very interesting. And I think if one or two people had yelled against the crowd and stood up, Pilate would have felt more empowered. And that moment might have been turned back, even though Christ clearly was determined. I mean, it was determined that he would have to give his life. But that moment didn't have to come out the way
it was going. I think we could get into a false sense of nationalism like this crowd did with the chief priests and rulers and the mob. And that sense of emotionalism, which I see happening in the evangelical world, that sense of emotionalism eventually, I think, will lead to revolution or revolutionary aspirations, unthinking aspirations. We're not thinking about what they're really doing, which is easily manipulated and controlled by Satan himself.
Absolutely. We need to be true to what God wants for us to do. And back to the point that I was trying to make, the crowd, whether it's our friends, whether it's our fellow church members, whether it's our fellow citizens of any country, will often say something and repeat it among themselves, which becomes self-reinforcing. Our point of reference needs to be God. On religious liberty, it needs to be the principles that are embodied there. And regardless of what people say, we have to stick with it.
Let me give you another example of that. And mind you, I'll just state right up front, and some people may not appreciate this, but I am a Republican. I'll just state it right up front for very good reasons. But
this is not a paid message.
Yes, yeah, it's right. But I'll tell you something.
We have rights to be whatever, but on religious liberty and as church members, those are secondary, and we're not to advance those particular loyalties.
What I was trying to say is that essentially when you look at certain events, you cannot just say that the Republican Party or the Democratic Party are the problem, because when you look at labor unions these days, I'll give you an example. Scott Brown, who was the guy who took over the Senate seat of Ted Kennedy in Massachusetts, was backed by nearly 60% of the AFL-CIO unions in Massachusetts. Mm. Republican, Tea Party. The Tea Party has gone after labor union members, especially unemployed blue-collar labor union members. In Washington State and Olympia, I had a situation where five of the 18 senators, of the 18 Republican senators, were for a forced unionization bill of all private and religious child care centers, as well as public state child care centers. So what I'm saying is that labor unions are starting to attract some Republicans.
Right. The issue is labor unions, not Democrats or Republicans. Now, on religious liberty, we've had historic stand against labor unions, not because we're against labor,
right,
but the dynamic of the labor union.
But when we're looking at revolution, when we're talking about revolution here, we're talking about a movement that, if we get caught up with our own political prejudices and we lose sight of what Jesus is trying to teach us, then we lose.
As Jesus began his earthly ministry, he stood up there as a young man in the synagogue in Nazareth, read from the prophet Isaiah, and it says people were impressed. They heard him gladly. A few minutes later, after he had taken the role of a prophet to himself, they were offended and rushed him toward the edge of a cliff and would have killed him, but he was providentially removed from their midst. It's interesting how quickly and easily the mob or the crowd can change. Jesus had stood there on the Mount of Blessing, given the Sermon on the Mount, and the crowd heard him gladly because he spoke with authority. But some of those same people almost certainly were present there in Pilate's courtyard as he asked the crowd, "What would you have me do with the man?" And they said, "Crucify him, crucify him." We need to be careful that we don't respond with the crowd which is nearly always wrong, which moves with a force that is beyond the individual. We need to be calculatedly pro-Christ, pro-religious liberty, pro-independent thought for ourselves, and serve God and answer correctly.
Liberty Magazine editor Lincoln Steed talking just a couple of years ago with Greg Hamilton, president of the Northwest Religious Liberty Association. Timely words on a very important topic. Our time is up for today. I invite you to visit libertymagazine.org for many more resources to arm yourself for the spiritual battle ahead. You can read Lincoln's blogs, you can subscribe to the magazine, you can also read the articles from the magazine, and listen to these radio programs as well as Liberty Insider, the television program that Lincoln Steed has on the Three Angels Broadcasting Network. That's all at libertymagazine.org. Until next time, this is Charles Mills inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call Three Angels Broadcasting Network at 618-627-4651 or email us through our website at 3abn.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.